ally in the Sahel. France has between 1,000 and 1,500 troops in Niger to fight the so-called war on terrorism. In Niger, there are not only French forces, but American and European troops as well. Burkina Faso and Mali have already kicked out French troops, many of whom are now stationed in Niger. Meanwhile, the turmoil has prompted some European nations to evacuate citizens by plane. Paris said recently it has completed the evacuation of hundreds of French and European citizens.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing from IRIB English Radio. In this program, we try to answer your queries, your issues you have regarding the Islamic upbringing of your children. And the answers are based upon Noble Quran and the narrations of Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, and his purified family. Well, today we have the pleasure to be with Professor Salman Nakavi, who is a faculty member at Al-Mustafa University. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome, sir.
Yes, thank you very much.
Professor, you are helping us with the tips, with the points, that how can we encourage our teens to be Islamic, and you have been helping us, like, we could encourage them towards Islamic art. We could encourage them to learn Arabic. We could encourage them for interfaith dialogue and community service. And now I want to ask you something. We have talked a lot about giving family time, having quality time with the family. But what we do in this time is also important. So how could parents actually encourage family time and involve their children in Islamic activities?
Yes, a very important point is that we should be able to engage with our children and give them, as you said, quality time. And what quality more than, for example, the recitation of the Quran together?
All right.
We should have an experience, a good, nice, exciting experience when we recite the Quran together. Unfortunately, we ourselves have not learned the Quran properly. And we can't teach our children to do so. So if we get involved in this, we need to first educate ourselves. Many of these child prodigies that we have today, who have memorized the Quran by heart, and they can, you know, recite any verse from any page that you point out and say they memorize them. Many of them have been able to do so because their parents first took upon themselves to learn the Quran in the proper way and to memorize it. Then they were able to teach their children to
right.
do so. So we need to be able to learn ourselves the proper recitation of the Quran, its meanings, the melodious way of reciting the Quran with As-Sawt al-Hasan. And this is a beautiful experience that we should all be engaged in. And then in early mornings or in the evenings, we can get together, sit in a circle, and then everyone can recite. One should be the guide, the mentor, the coach, or we can invite someone to do so. But we sit all together in a circle, and everyone, the small boy, of the five-year kid or the elderly person, they can all sit together.
Right.
I can cite you an example in Qom, in the after Friday prayers. There's a sheikh who sits after the Friday prayers, and people sit around him, with him in a circle. There's a 4-5 year boy, there's a 60-year-old guy, there's a 40-year boy person. Everyone, they are sitting together in a circle.
Mm-hmm.
And he takes the lead, and everyone recites the way he does, and they everyone follows him. Then he wants them to recite individually. And when he points out the mistakes according to their level.
Right.
So that's a very beautiful learning experience. That can be repeated at home also. And we can get together to recite the Quran together. Or for example, we should be able to pray together. And the father should be the prayer leader. And he should be such that he is capable of leading the prayers.
Right.
He should have the qualities. It's not the mandate of a scholar only to lead the prayers. The family head can also lead the prayers.
Right.
And he should have the qualification to do that. The least qualification for every believing Muslim is that he is reciting the prayer properly, with proper applying the proper rules, the pronunciation. Everything is so good that his family can offer their prayers behind him.
Right.
So this time is quality time together.
Right. These were some of the very beautiful examples. There's more to explore, so don't go anywhere. We'll be back in a while.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. We are talking about the family time and how Islamic things could be increased in this family time. Professor, you said that reciting Quran together in the family, offering Jamaat prayers together in the family could be very few examples of spending a very good quality time in the family.
Yes, we can sit together to learn the translation of the Quran, or recite the Nahj al-Balagha, or Sahifa Sajjadiyah, or even the Mafatih al-Janan. We can recite the prayers together, everyone, every day, a small prayer with its meanings, with trying to understand, to discuss what the prayer is saying, what the holy verse is saying. There should be a discussion about it. The children should feel free to question. So we need to, you know, update our information and our knowledge also to be able to carry out those things.
I think I was discussing with one of my friends recently, which is the Quranic verse that has changed your life? And she would ask me the same question, which Quranic verses have changed your life? And then when we were explaining these things and explaining our experiences with these verses, her experiences were adding more to my knowledge regarding that particular verse. And my understanding of those verses added more to her knowledge about that particular verse. So sometimes if you discuss even questions like this in the family, it really adds to the knowledge, and you have a different perspective towards that verse, and different perspectives can actually help us lead to a very strong meaning.
Yes, so this interaction could lead to the emergence of something new for all of us. And if there's a question, then we can go out to a scholar and ask him. And also, for example, we could engage in reciting the book of practical laws, the Risalat, the Tawzi'ul Masail, and discuss the Masail, the practical laws of Islam together, and see how to implement them, and to help each other to implement them, the proper way of ablution, the wudu, the salah, the tahara. So there's so many things can be done together in a collective manner in the family. This is a way of, you know, educating our children without taking them to a class for it. Especially children, especially, they run away from classes which are focused on Islamic, you know, things, Islamic teachings or whatever. So it can be done in a non-formal way. It can be done in an informal way.
Play-by method.
Yes, so the important thing is they should learn the Quran.
The message of Quran.
The message of the Quran, and they understand
content.
The Quran, and they also, you know, practice what is being said. So, or even we can discuss ethical issues, moral issues. We can also discuss the various issues that are taking place in the society, in our neighborhood, at the global level, at the regional level, even when we want to enhance our knowledge about the political currents and the affairs which are going on in the world and that they are impacting us as Muslims.
Exactly. Well, we have more in the store to explore on this topic, but after a short break, so stay tuned.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات
The Prophet صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم said The best among you is he who learns the Quran and teaches it.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing, and we're with Professor Salman Naqvi discussing what Islamic things could be encouraged in the family time. Professor said so far that we could recite Quran together, we could debate on the content of Quran, we could go for the congregation prayers together in the family and do a lot of things. Well, Professor, you know, whenever there is this political discussion in the family, whenever we have some family time together, you would often see a father and a boy, they would get engaged in some political discussion. And seeing that, the mother and the daughter will prefer to go into the kitchen or do some kind of work which suits them more. But how important is it for all of them to be together and to be discussing some ethical issue, which is actually emphasized in Islam?
Yes, when it comes to issues pertaining to ethics and morals and even beliefs, we can't discuss them in a vacuum, can we? All our beliefs, our belief system, our value system, they can be implemented and applied to different life situations, whether it is of a political nature, it is of an economic nature, it is of a social nature. So we don't necessarily, when we're talking about politics, we're not going to take sides with someone. We need to just analyze what's happening and seeing what is in accordance with our principles and what is not in accordance with our principles. We don't need to discuss personalities. We don't need to discuss maybe a person who is a political leader.
Like, even if you're discussing politics, there's this beautiful book by Ayatollah Motahhari, Society and History, which discusses what an Islamic society should look like, what are the principles and basic elements of that society. You could actually discuss those issues which could be both as per Ayatollah Khomeini as well, that religion is not different from politics. So even if we want to have some political discussions, we could actually see what are the issues that are happening in our society in line with our teachings of Islam, Quran, and the teachings of Ahlul Bayt.
Yes, so we need to bring out those principles and values in our discussions about the various issues that are being faced by society. For example, we have many political upheavals in this part of the world, in the West, in the Pak subcontinent, in the Far East. Everywhere we have issues which the Islamic Ummah is facing. Palestine, Kashmir, Yemen, so many issues. Indian Muslims, they are facing so many difficulties nowadays. So they have to be discussed, and the underlying principles and beliefs have to be mentioned to our children. They should realize And they should understand if there's some oppression taking place, there's some tyranny. So what are the principles which need to be understood? And what things are being done against those principles? For example, when you talk about the people in Kashmir, they don't have the right for self-determination, for example. That has been taken away from them. Apart from the Islamic teachings, which we have, even the United Nations resolutions were there once upon a time when they had to be followed, but India did not follow them. So we need to understand those principles. We need to make our children understand what's happening in Palestine, what's happening
in Yemen, in Syria.
Why should Israel, why shouldn't it remain as a country today?
So-called superpowers.
Not that we want to tell them to wipe it off the face of the earth. No, we want to tell them what is the basis for that.
Right. Thank you so much, Professor, for being with us and for that intellectual and that very strong discussion, which is really required, which is the need of time. Family time is there, but what should be discussed in the family time is also important. The professor gave us some of the very important tips. What should be discussed in that family time? Thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned for some more exciting episodes. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the position of our family when it comes to charity and generosity when living an Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It is such an honor, dear friends, to be at your service. So we're talking about the position and the status of our family members when it comes to charity and generosity. Now, sometimes people have a tendency to not really know who to be generous with or who to give charity to. Now, unfortunately, we have this conception and this idea in our minds that the people who deserve our generosity and our charity the most are individuals who are far removed from us. Meaning there are individuals who we don't know, there are individuals who you have to kind of find because they're hiding, you know, or there are individuals who we have no relation with. Now, this tends to cause certain problems because in a very beautiful Islamic economic and financial system, and in an Islamic lifestyle, we find that every individual is responsible financially, spiritually, morally, ethically, and in our discussion, charitably, with those people that are in their immediate circle. And if everybody were to take care of the people in these different aspects in their immediate circle, then all of these circles together create a society. And matter of fact, in this manner, you probably wouldn't have individuals who are poor or are needy, because everybody is taking care of their own. It is when we forget to take care of our own on a, you know, familial and family level that on a societal level we end up turning into problems. Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we're talking about charity and generosity and how we need to primarily focus on our family members. Now, we kind of started to talk a little bit about it in the previous segment, but we're going to try to close it off in this segment of Islamic lifestyle. Now, what we are talking about, of course, is that if every individual were to take care of their immediate family members, so, you know, we're talking about like your spouse, your children, your parents, your siblings, right? These individuals that are your close-knit family members, they are your nuclear family members, if you will. We're not talking about relatives or cousins or friends or these kind of individuals. Those family members that are very close to us. Many a time, it is these individuals who are in need. They need your charity, they need your generosity, and they need your help. But for some reason, we end up overlooking these very individuals. Now, we're not saying that, you know, your spouse or your children or your parents, they are financially well off and you should still give them charity and you should still be generous. That doesn't make any sense. That does not go along with the definition of charity or generosity. But what is an unfortunate condition and situation is that there are times when these same individuals, our spouses or our children or our parents or our siblings, are in need, yet we don't help them. Now, when we don't help those people in our immediate circle, we really can't help and expect other people in their other circles to come out of their circle and help ours. And so if everybody helps their own circle, these circles will create a society which is strong and independent and definitely will be able to better live an Islamic lifestyle.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
In the limelight.
In the annals of Palestinian resistance, there are many important landmarks, but Jenin would find its place near the top. This small refugee camp in the northern West Bank has endured more than its share of Zionist barbarism, but the brave youth have not succumbed. Called the Jenin Brigades, they have proved more than a match for the heavily armed Zionist thugs. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Crescent International Road for 48 hours on July 3rd and 4th. Israeli regime occupation army threw its military might at the residents of Jenin refugee camp that is spread over less than half a square kilometer's space. The densely packed camp, comprising houses and alleyways, is home to some 23,600 people. All of them are Palestinians, either ethnically cleansed from their villages by Zionist terrorist gangs in 1947 to 1948, or are descendants of the displaced Palestinians. During last month's Zionist attack, some 3,000 Palestinians were also forced to flee again from the refugee camp of Jenin. More than 1,000 heavily armed Israeli regime troops invaded the camp. They brought attack dogs to terrorize the Palestinians. Armored personnel carriers and hundreds of bulldozers were also deployed, plowing their way through the camp, resulting in the destruction or damage to more than 80% of houses. Drones and helicopter gunships were also used in the assault. Imagine 23,000 people crammed in a tiny enclave being bombarded from the air. Through its lying nature, the Zionist regime claimed it sent in the army to kill or capture, as they claimed, terrorists. After 2 days of attacks, 12 Palestinians were killed, among them 4 children. At least 130 Palestinians were injured. The Zionists prevented ambulances from picking up the injured. They also attacked hospitals to prevent them from providing medical aid to the victims. Did the Israeli regime army really kill or capture any terrorists? What is a terrorist anyway? People under occupation have the right, under international law, to resist their occupiers by any means necessary. This is what the Palestinians are doing to confront the Zionist invaders. So, the designation of Palestinians as terrorists is utterly false. It is the Zionists who are the real terrorists. They are the ones terrorizing the Palestinians, even in the refugee camps in their own homeland. Residents of the camp also refuted Zionist claims. They said it was civilians, not armed fighters, who bore the brunt of the Israeli regime assault. The question, however, is why does Israel even bother to tell lies? After all, the Western supporters, financiers, and backers have always backed them, regardless of the crimes they commit. Whatever crimes the Zionist regime commits, and it has a long, gory record of horrific crimes killing children, women, and the elderly, the collective West has a pet phrase saying, Israel has the right to defend itself. How is the Israeli regime defending itself when its heavily armed troops invade a refugee camp? And it does so with massive force, using lethal weapons supplied by the West. We do not and shall not expect the collective West to stand up for truth and justice. The fabricated regime of Israel is a Zionist settler colonial entity led by people who are blood relations of the Europeans and North Americans. The Zionists are doing exactly what the European settlers did to the indigenous peoples of North and South America and Australia. They perpetrated genocides, reducing the indigenous peoples to a few scattered reservations. Let us, however, return to the question of Israel's two-day assault on the Jenin refugee camp. Did Israel succeed in its mission of eliminating the militants? Israel failed to achieve the military and political objectives it set out for its invasion of Jenin. The resistance groups remain and have been strengthened at the refugee camp, and the entire country has rallied behind them, says Salem Brahma, a Palestinian activist. The assault was a complete failure. The Jenin brigades were highly organized and motivated. They were able to conduct sophisticated operations to frustrate Zionist incursions. After 2 days of the attacks, the Zionists decided to flee. Their failure was also evident from the fact that the Zionists destroyed homes, leaving most Palestinians without shelter. This amounts to collective punishment that the Zionists have repeatedly inflicted on the Palestinian people. The fact that they have not been held accountable has only emboldened them. The two-day assault on Jenin refugee camp was part of this old Zionist campaign. It did not succeed. How did the Jenin resistance frustrate Zionist designs? They had set up traps for Israeli regime armored personnel carriers. The Zionists quickly realized that in urban combat, they will suffer mass casualties. Their advantage of heavy weapons was neutralized. The Zionists can kill unarmed Palestinians, but they cannot face them in a situation where the odds are reduced. This was a price the Zionists could not afford to pay. It would have cost any regime much political capital. In the Zionist snake pit, no politician can afford to pay that price. Second, the Jenin brigades showed remarkable coordination. Fighters were rotated so that some fought while others rested and recuperated. They also had the support of general population, an essential ingredient in any fight. In addition to the alleyways that proved immensely advantageous for the Palestinian fighters because they were unfamiliar terrain, they had also dug tunnels between different locations. Thus, when their firing position was identified by the Zionists to carry out retaliatory strikes, the fighters had already left that location. This explains why there were so few casualties among the Palestinian fighters. The question that must be asked is, why are the Zionists so worried about the resistance in Jenin? It is providing inspiration to Palestinians in other places, especially Nablus and other parts of the Israeli-occupied West Bank, to resist the occupiers. If Jenin can do it, so can others. Jenin has faced Zionist attacks and barbarism before. In February 2002, the Zionists had attacked the camp, killing 52 Palestinians and injuring hundreds of others. Today's fighters are children that had witnessed those Zionist crimes. They vow to resist the occupiers and not allow them to get away with their criminal conduct. It is also the Palestinians from Jenin who have launched operations against the Zionists in such places as Tel Aviv and other Israeli cities. In recent weeks, there have been a spate of daring operations. The Zionists are clearly worried. Given their deep divisions, not least over the gutting of the Zionist regime's judicial system, the Israeli regime is incapable of fighting on multiple fronts. The intensification of Palestinian resistance led by the Jenin brigades is causing them nightmares. Not surprisingly, the number of Israelis suffering from depression has multiplied in recent years. Jenin's resistance has much to do with this phenomenon.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم dear listeners, brothers and sisters from all around the world. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is For a Better Life. I am Bita here with you again, and we're going to go through another topic in this episode, which was really interesting. One of the things that always, I think all the people around the world always think about these kind of concepts, the concept of love and a perspective on these in Islam, which is
really important because in Islam, these two concepts, love and hatred, are combined together so much that they cannot actually differentiate completely between these two. And there are a group of people, maybe some of our listeners too, that think that Islam wants us to be free and empty of any hatred, but hatred can be good for human beings too. I mean, there is a necessity for love and hatred to be together. So, you know, let's start with talking about stories about affection and love that Amme and Awliyaullah has and had for actually creatures. You know, the fact is that the affection the holy imams show towards the people is such that its equal is not found anywhere. So you cannot compare your love and affection for creatures with these actually high-level people. And there are many stories that if I want to tell you, narrate you all these stories, we're gonna go out of time. So I'm just gonna narrate one beautiful story about kindness, love, and affection of Imam Ali for his fellow creatures.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email that is englishradio@irib.ir.
Once the Prophet told Ali, peace be upon him, go and command those people to pay sadaqah or charity. How much should I ask them to pay? Asked Ali. 1 dinar, replied the Prophet. Ali said, they are unable to pay this much. 0.5 dinar, said the Prophet. They cannot even pay this much, said Ali. The Prophet said, a grain of gold. Ali said, maybe they cannot even afford this. And the Prophet said, oh Ali, you are very kind to the people. All right, tell them to give only 1 dirham. Amr al-Mu'mini used to say, the reduction in this command was due to me. So, as we see here, there is a wave and surge of love and affection towards all the creatures from Imams and Aimmah, which is really difficult for some normal individuals like us to achieve to this level, but we have to put them in the place of role models, and we have to follow this behavior to achieve somewhere. You know, the concept of love in our religion is actually a bit complicated. And there is this beautiful verse in Holy Quran, and they deny them divine signs of miracle unjustly and proudly while their soul had been certain about it. So there is this concept of love which is really close to the concept of obedience of all the servants. Let's skip it to here and go for a short break, then we're going to come back on this beautiful topic. Dear listeners, this is For a Better Life. We're talking about the concept of love, hatred, and affection towards all the creatures and human love and divine love in this episode. So, you know, sometimes just having the knowledge of the religious facts is not enough. There are a lot of people around the world who know what is true, what is right, and what is wrong, but it doesn't just make them and force them to go through the right path. So the necessary element here is love. You have to love something to obey it. And the prototype example of those who know very well but refuse to practice what they have known is Iblis, the great Satan. According to Islamic sources, Iblis does whatever he does out of arrogance and selfishness, not out of ignorance. Thus, a person becomes faithful and a believer only when he is respected and only when he has respect and love. Reading a famous hadith that the Prophet Muhammad asked his companions of the firmest handhold of faith. They suggested different things like prayer and hajj. When they couldn't give the appropriate answer, the Prophet said, The firmest handhold of faith is to love for the sake of God and to hate for the sake of God, to befriend God's friends and to renounce his enemies. The same idea is emphasized by Imams of the household of the Prophet. For example, someone asked Imam Sadr whatever love and hatred derive from faith. Imam replied, "Is faith anything but love and hate?" The same hadith is narrated from Imam Baqir, "The faith is love and love is the faith." An overall study of the Quran and narrations, hadith, and so on shows that, in Islamic view, love, either in its divine form or in human form, belongs only to the precious and valuable things, as far as they are so. There are always, firstly, the degrees of the love that different things deserve or receive differ according to their merits, and secondly, that anything which is in conflict with those precious and valuable things or prevents their realization should be hated. For example, if justice is to be loved, injustice should be hated. Or if a person who tells the truth is to be loved, a person who lies should be hated. Of course, in respect to their other characters and deeds, the situation might be different. A single person might be loved or praised for something, and at the same time, he might be hated or blamed for the other. So, as you see, there is a correlation between love and hatred here. You have to love the things that should be loved, and you have to, in the contrary, hate things that should be hated. There is another perspective in this view, that there is a group of people who think like only love should be actually existed in your heart, in your soul, and so on, which is not true, as we mentioned up to here. There should be a combination of this love and hatred, which we actually call it as tawalla and tabarra in Islam, which is one of the most important things we know in Islam. Therefore, even fighting against those who do wrongs and injustice should be out of love. This is really beautiful. You know, there is a kind of paradoxical content here, which you are fighting people, you are hating people, and it is out of love, loving something which is more precious, which is superior, and which is the source of all these beauties and love that is spread around the world. So, for example, for a murderer such as Hitler to fight against him, to punish him, and if needed, destroy him, which is really necessary, because if you don't, you are betraying the love you have for something more precious in this world. Otherwise, he would do more crimes and would degrade himself more and more and would suffer much from severe punishments in this world and hereafter. So, up to here, we talked about the beautiful and pure affection of Ummah towards their fellow creatures, which is something really unique that we have to try to practice it in everyday life. But it doesn't mean that we can get to their level, because it's a really high level for perfect people. So we have to put them as some role models and we have to follow them. And we talked about these concepts of love and hatred, which both are combined together and both are necessary for our world. And you have to stand up for the right things and go against the wrong things. And this is the exact meaning of love. I wish you a life full of love, full of hatred, which is out of love for all the bad things and dark things in the world. Thank you for listening to me in this episode. Unfortunately, it was all the time we had. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share he knows.
Oh, English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Prospects appear to be particularly dim when it comes to Germany's car industry, which accounts for close to 5% of its economy. There has been a massive decline in car production in Germany over the last few years, feeding into the stagnating industrial production. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Sputnik news agency has covered this story and tells us more. According to Germany's Federal Statistical Office, the Statist, there are choppy waters ahead for the European country's economy, which is already in a technical recession, with shrinking automotive sector and construction output at a major drag. Economists at Capital Economics and Commerzbank are cited as warning the economic woes of Europe's main industrial economy, which have been piling up in no small part due to blowback from its barrage of anti-Russian sanctions, are currently indicating that another contraction can be expected later on this year. As it is, Germany is in a technical recession, with gross domestic product or GDP tumbling over two consecutive quarters, by 0.5% in last year's final quarter, and then by 0.5% in the first quarter of 2023. Now official figures show a 3.5% drop in Germany's huge automotive sector has driven a 1.5% decline in industrial production in June as compared with May. The Statist, Germany's Federal Statistical Office, said output also shrank by 2.8% in the construction sector, also taking its toll on the overall industrial production. Prospects appear to be particularly dim when it comes to Germany's car industry, which accounts to close to 5% of Germany's economy. There has been a massive decline in car production over the last few years, feeding into the stagnating industrial production. Figures show that after peaking at around 6 million back in 2012, since then, car production in Germany has followed a stubbornly downward trend, with the COVID-19 pandemic that snarled supply chains also factoring in. According to the German Automotive Industry Association, Germany's car production has hit its lowest level in more than three decades, with just some 2.2 million cars rolling off production lines in the first half of 2023. Pushed out by local competitors, Volkswagen has come up against sluggish sales in the biggest export market of vehicles, China, with a 14.5% drop in its deliveries to the nation in the first quarter. Hildegard Müller, president of the German Association of the Automotive Industry, warned in a statement in July that due to the current economic situation and the development of incoming orders, growth rates would soon be slowing down, as the order backlog was being reduced. It is evident from the hard-hitting figures that the decline of car manufacturing is hurting the German economy. It should be noted that the nation, along with other EU member states, has been up against accelerating inflation as part of post-pandemic global economic recession. The situation was further exacerbated by sweeping anti-Russian sanctions that resulted in a disruption of supply chains that led to a raging energy crisis in Western economies. According to economic research center ZEW, rising interest rates in the Eurozone and the United States, coupled with weak export markets, are predicted to further contribute to Germany's economic troubles through the end of this year. In the latest World Economic Outlook, the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, projected the German economy to contract 0.3% this year before rebounding 1.3% in 2024. The European industrial behemoth has suffered the most painful blowback from the West's attempts to cripple Russia's economy for its special operation in Ukraine. Berlin's industrial output slumps and the country sank into recession earlier this year after losing access to the reliable, low-cost and abundant energy supplies from Moscow that have been pivotal to Germany's industrial sector development. As per international economic observers, the economic slowdown caused largely by disruption of Germany's energy ties to Russia is contributing to gradual deindustrialization and may be perceived as yet the first falling domino in the European Union. Economists have previously told the Sputnik news agency the destruction of Russia's Nord Stream pipeline network, Berlin's opting to join the collective West energy sanctions against Russia, the pushing forward of the so-called green agenda by replacing fossil fuels may result in an even sharper economic decline for Germany. Germany's national broadcaster Deutsche Welle has covered the same story. Figures published on Monday, 7th of August, show Germany's industrial output fell for a second consecutive month in June, with a drop of 1.5%, far wider than the previous month's slip of 0.1%. The German Economy Ministry warned that high energy prices and interest rates had taken their toll, despite rising demand. The slump in output was greater than had been expected by analysts polled by finance data firm FactSet, who had predicted a 0.5% decline. Germany's traditionally strong automobile sector showed a significant fall of 3.5% after production in the sector increased by 5.8% the previous month. The construction industry, at minus 2.8%, also brought down the overall result. The Economy Ministry said the outlook for the industrial economy remains gloomy despite the rising demand because these are strongly affected by fluctuations of big orders. It added, given the subdued business and export expectations of companies, there is currently no sign of a noticeable recovery. ING analyst Carsten Brzeski said the latest data was another illustration of the country's ongoing stagnation, adding that it could also be an omen of further bad news for gross domestic product GDP in Germany. Carsten Brzeski said, with today's numbers, the risk has increased that the flash estimate of stagnating GDP growth in the second quarter of this year could still be revised downwards. As the energy crisis precipitated by the Russia-Ukraine war began to bite, bringing higher inflation and interest rates, Europe's largest economy unexpectedly slid into recession in late 2022 and early 2023. Germany's central bank, the Bundesbank, predicts that the country's economy will contract by 0.3% in 2023. The Reuters news agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. A recent survey showed manufacturing activity across the Eurozone contracted in July at the fastest pace since the COVID-19 was cementing its grip on the world as demand slumped despite factories cutting their prices sharply. there was considerable weakness seen in Germany, Europe's largest economy, while France and Italy, the second and third largest Eurozone economies, also recorded marked deterioration since June. The HCOB's final Eurozone Manufacturing Purchasing Managers Index, PMI, compiled by Standard & Poor's Global, fell to 42.7 in July from June's 43.4, its lowest level since May of 2020, and matching a preliminary reading. A reading below 50 marks a contraction in activity. An index measuring output, which feeds into a composite PMI Purchasing Managers Index, due in the coming days and seen as a good gauge of economic health, dropped to 42.7 from 44.2, a low not seen in over 3 years.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The viewpoints of the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, about Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and the tragedy of Karbala. Giving you a physical example, a piece of 100% pure gold never decays. Nor does it rust, but the more copper, iron, and other cheaper elements are added to the alloy, the more it becomes prone to decay and destruction. This is a general rule. This applies to what is tangible, but when it comes to spirituality, these equations are far more discerning. We do not understand it because of our materialistic and ordinary vision. Nonetheless, men of vision and understanding perceive. The critic in this matter, the goldsmith and the jeweler, is God the Almighty. And for sure, the critic sees well. If there is an ounce of impurity in our work, its value would diminish accordingly, and God would reduce its lasting effect. God the Exalted is an insightful critic. The work of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam is a work in which there is not even a slight hint of impurity. Hence, you see, this quality achievement has lasted to this day and will last forever.
Ana mazlum Hussein, ana mazlum Hussein, ana mazlum.
أنا لاتشان
Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, made the army of reason overcome the army of ignorance.
أنا لاتشان
أنا لات
Who could believe that after these people were killed in the desert, far from their homes, while their bodies were buried there, with so much propaganda spread against Islam, all killed in a such heartless manner, this hometown of Medina was put on fire and even their martyrdom, the story of Hira, which happened the next year, this rose garden was devastated and the petals of roses were all thrust. Yet, later, anyone would feel the aroma of the rose water from this garden. According to which rule of nature, a petal of that rose garden can last so long in nature. However you view, the more time passes by, the more aroma of the rose garden spreads. There are some people who do not believe that Prophet Muhammad is the grandfather of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam and that he follows in his path. Yet they believe